Interesting about time and love. And we'll get to that here coming up in just a second with the story of Patrice Chaplin. I'll also remind you, too, about the movie Coraline, which is a slightly different concept of sort of somebody traveling through a portal and time and love. In this case, it's sort of familial love. I saw that earlier today in 3D. It was very cool. It's based on a Neil Gaiman story. And the story, in effect, is that a little girl had a parallel family going on in her own house, a dimension where they were dolls. And in order to commit to this relationship in this alternative universe within her own house, if she wanted to stay with her fun parents, who all had button eyes, she had to sew buttons into her own eye sockets or have them sewn into her eye sockets. She had to commit to becoming one of the button people. It was kind of creepy. So before my wife went to bed, I went and I fished through a sewing kit and I found two big black button eyes. And when she wakes up this morning, I will have taped them over my face. So I'll have button eyes when she wakes up. In fact, I was just practicing that during the top of the hour there, taping these button eyes, sort of gluing them onto my eyelids. And then I try to take a picture of it. It's really hard once you've, you know, put buttons over your eyes to actually get a photo because you can't really see what you're shooting. But I think I got a good one. I'll try to get it on my blog coming up later on. And in our house, that qualifies as love. A good gag is how we often express our love. And everybody's a little different. And this story from Patrice Chaplin is very different. We'll get to that coming up next. Been talking about it all night. Can't wait to find out more. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Ponet. Patrice Chaplin has a very interesting story indeed, not just from her own life story in terms of the career that she enjoyed and many fascinating places she's been and done, but also in the story she shares in the book City of Secrets. And thank you, Patrice Chaplin. Aren't you the clever writer?
I hope so. I don't know.
You are. It's very well written. And it, in fact, probably better for you, although I've looked at your biography information, talk a little bit about your career arc, because you've done some amazing things in your life.
Well, I have, you know, that's for sure. I've done them without compromise in as much as I've gone for it, you know, and sometimes it's worked and it's been fantastic. One of the highlights, really, was the book Siesta, which I wrote in the late 1970s, and it was filmed in 87 by an American company. It was directed by Mary Lambert, and it was based actually on Girona, and it was a pre-runner, really, of the book City of Secrets. And it had music by Miles Davis. And I know in America there are a lot of people who see that film as a cult movie.
Well, love that. But you've also, let's explain the Chaplin part of your name, Patrice Chaplin,
yes,
because that in itself is a very cool Hollywood story.
That's a cool Hollywood story. Well, yes, I married Charlie and Una's son, Michael Chaplin. Actually, we were together in Salvador Dali's house in Spain. That's where we spent our pre-marriage time. And, I mean, Dali was all for it because he loved the idea of this love story. And Michael and I married in the 60s, and we have two children. And we still indeed have an ongoing relationship. Michael's writing a book, in fact, about, he lives in Montségur in France, which you've probably heard of that, yeah? The Cathars, and he lives there in that area, very near the mountains. And I certainly saw quite a lot of Charlie, which was a privilege indeed, because he lived in South London. That's where I come from.
Right.
So we used to go out and look for the old places of his past, his childhood. That was wonderful.
Did they recognize him when you'd be out walking on the streets and stuff?
Did they recognize Charlie?
Yeah. Did they recognize Charlie at that point?
Well,
I know
yeah,
he would have been older.
He used to go in the sort of poor suburbs of London. They were quite poor then, in a Rolls Royce from the Savoy Hotel. So someone was there, you know.
That's true. That would be kind of a giveaway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting for him. Yes.
And so at what time in your life did the events that you chronicle in City of Secrets take place?
Well, in effect, really, they began the minute I arrived in Girona. I mean, I was an existentialist. Now, that means in terms of today, I suppose it means you live in the moment.
Right.
And I put the title there well because I did know Jean-Paul Sartre when I was in Paris and Simone de Beauvoir. And I knew them only because, you know, I was a bohemian. I used to dance to trad jazz. I had a friend called Beryl. And our idea of life was just to take the roads as they came, and we just traveled. So we were interesting to these French intellectual anarchic people. You know, they liked this. And so we, with their support, we carried on traveling down to Spain. And I thought we would go on forever. I mean, there was no reason to stop. We would end up in Hollywood or somewhere. But we got to Girona, and that place, it was like the place where I should have been born. It was like where I was meant to be. So I stopped there. I never went any further.
And what year was that?
That was in the mid-1950s. And okay. It was in 1957. I was very young. I mean, I was pre the time when you got a passport. So I had to I was on a study course in Paris, and I got one from my friend Beryl, and we were able to go. We were supposed to be studying. Well, we were studying the language. We were certainly learning it, but not quite at school.
Right. Not in the formal way they were expecting.
No.
And I want to get into the story as you related in the book, but I also want to talk about the story that you were prevented from relating and have you explain that when you gave them the material, the editors, and I think rightfully so, I mean, they look at this, it's a beautifully written book. I mean, it's poetic.
Thank you.
And yet there are things that they felt the average reader couldn't process or wouldn't accept and encouraged you to take out, or did they flat out say, we got to take this part out over here?
Flat out say, we're going to take this out. Because they said they had the reasons for doing it. They said that the average person won't understand it. This was the control area there. And in Spain, they said, you know, you can't write about this. It wouldn't be wise. So I said, in what ways? Well, it would be dangerous. So, I mean, from the minute my eyes opened in Girona, I was in the story without ever really knowing I was in it. And it was only... Well, 50 years later that I knew what it was all about.
Well, here's what I'm going to ask of you. And this is kind of how I've been promoting it, so I hope you're amenable to this.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have you tell the story as you would have told the story without somebody over your shoulder editing it. And I think that that doesn't take anything away from the book, which is its own beautiful read. And we're talking about the book City of Secrets. This is Patrice Chaplin. But I'd love to have you... If you would, just tell the story as in the sort of the director's cut version, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and start from the beginning of how you came across this, when you first began to realize that something was going on in your life.
Well, the first thing I did was I met the custodian of a private society, and that was José Perez, who became my lifelong friend. You know, I was involved with him for years. I thought he was a political activist. He got people who Franco hotlisted for trouble. He got them out of Spain. So he was doing politically private stuff. And I thought most of what he was doing was connected with that. I didn't understand at all that he was also the custodian of documents which had been in existence, well, pre-medieval times. It also had quite a lot to do with the Kabbalah, which began, a whole strand of it began in Girona, Spain, and there was sort of mystics and rabbinic scholars there, which it was a flourishing, amazing center in the medieval times, which the Spanish then afterwards covered up. Now, they also covered up the whole story of the transformation, which and the portals, which was basically what a lot of what this was about. Now, I knew there was, I was young, but I mean, my eyes were certainly open and I was still learning the language. And I knew there was quite a lot of pressure going on between Girona and Rennes-le-Château. And there's a lot of stories about the priest who suddenly became rich overnight, Abbé Saunier. I did go with José, and I didn't know this was a society. I just knew that this was a kind of private group, and they thought that I was young and that I was English, I wouldn't understand it. I went along with them. And I went to Rennes-le-Château, where they searched from top to toe. This was before it ever became known.
Before it was famous. Before Holy Blood, Holy Grail.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Wonderful.
They didn't want anything coming out. They wanted to smother any kind of signs of what had gone on there.
Well, and you're going to find that just and for the purposes of clarity for the uninitiated, I'm going to probably slow you down from time to time and try to focus on this so that everybody can follow along, because it especially at the beginning it's a little complicated. So you get involved in this sort of admittedly kind of a secret society. They bring you in, figuring she's going to be a safe person to have around. She probably doesn't understand the language as much, and she's a lot of fun, so she gets to come.
Yeah.
And they go to Rennes-le-Château, this is the sort of the remnants of the chateau, isn't it? Even at this point, you're mostly looking not at the original structures, but sort of what's left of them.
Well, they were the original structures. Yes, it was the church, the tower,
And they were intact still? Because I thought that they had renovated
them. They were crumbling.
That's what I thought.
The church was more or less as it was when the priest had restored it in the most extraordinary way. It was a very, very strange and almost on the edge of demonic church. It was. It didn't have anything holy about it, for sure. The society closed off any kind of signs or evidence, and the society was never in Rennes-le-Château. It was always in Girona. And the priests used to go from Rennes-le-Château to Girona for the material that he needed and also that he needed to secrete away.
Right.
So when he died, there was nothing found in Rennes-le-Château. It was all gone. And the thing what he had in Girona, which he was very lucky to have, was a house with a tower and a French woman called Maria Tordes. And I knew her because she was then at the end of her life, and she was living alone with a gardener in that house. The interesting thing about the story is what the priest actually came for. He came to Girona, one, to copy that tower. And this was what he was quite obsessed with, was to make the same tower that was in Girona in Rennes-le-Château. And so this neo-Gothic tower, which people talk about in Rennes-le-Château, saying, why did he build it? What was the purpose? It was to actually connect with the one in Spain. He also owned the house in Rennes-le-Château under the name of the French woman there, and he saw people he could no longer see in his own parish because his money was causing considerable interest and concern. It was said it came from the Habsburg family.
Well, let's focus here for a moment on the time. So we're talking about the activities of Rennes-le-Château and the priest that became famous for having all of this money that he came into was what year? What years are we talking about that he was building?
He discovered it apparently in 1891. He suddenly found four scrolls in the church, which it was a rundown church. It was way off the patch where people would expect him to be, because he was very much a fast career person. And what was he doing in this backwater? Well, he was there because he was looking for something. He found it. There were four scrolls in the altar columns. He went straight away with them in 1891, straight off to Paris, and he had them decoded, and he met people, and in the normal way of life, he wouldn't meet. He met people like Debussy, for example, the opera singer then, like Maria Callas, she was very famous, Emma Calvey. He met a lot of people who were doing Kabbalah, Kabbalistic, and occult activities. He had these decoded. He then met the Habsburg, one of the Habsburg family, who then funded him to continue discovering what needed to be discovered. He was busy.
Right.
He then immediately crossed over into Spain. It would have taken a day in those times, because there were trains, but there was no mainly carriages and horses. He would get to Girona. He found the house with the tower. That was one of the things he had to actually implement, was to copy that tower. That was the key thing. When he got there, he bought the house. He put the French woman into the house. She was about, they said she was 17, but some people said she was younger. It was bought under the auspices of a lawyer. He fronted the deal. It had never been out of the church's hands. And he also infiltrated, most importantly, the secret, the private, they preferred to be called private society, in Girona, where it had been for hundreds of years. That was the key.
What was the original charter for this private society in Girona?
Well, they held documents which they said would change the world, which they felt was dangerous to be allowed out or to be outed in any way. They held them as secretly as indeed they had the Jewish Kabbalistic material. They felt that anyone who got hold of these documents would have undue power, which they would misuse. And it was this power, this was the kind of mysterious power that people always looked for in Rennes-le-Château. It was never there. It was in Girona, had been for centuries. And Saunier knew about it because his predecessor of 100 years before, Abbé Bigoux, had left these scrolls in the church giving the information. So it was always known it was in some place or another, but they didn't know that it was over in Spain, which for many people made sense because that's where the Kabbalah, some people say the Kabbalah was initiated
right.
in Girona.
And that is a part of history that people don't quite understand, that the Kabbalah, as we understand it today, was really codified in the Middle Ages in Spain.
Yes.
And it was at that time, Spain was kind of a hotbed of that type of scholarship, because it was Muslim scholarship, Muslim mysticism, Jewish mysticism, Christian mysticism. It all were kind of blending together. And then the Inquisition comes in and sorts that all out for them. So let's just stop right here, and then we'll come back. We're talking with Patrice Chaplin. The book is City of Secrets. And this is just what you need to know before we start talking about this ongoing relationship next, and how time travel comes into it, and how we tie the grail into it, too, coming up next. Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Well, the story just gets more interesting from here. City of Secrets, the true life experience of Patrice Chaplin. And we'll pick it up just where we left it off. She is visiting. She's a young teenager. She has started a relationship with a guy named Jose, who's part of a secret society. She falls in love not just with him, but with the whole town of Girona in 1955, Spain, a town which was connected in a way that most people wouldn't have known with the famous Rennes-le-Château. Right, the Abbey area in France, where people had been marveling for years how this priest, this unknown Saunier, was able to get all of this wealth accumulated in these churches built and the chapel to look so beautiful and everything out of nowhere, and it was because of the scrolls that he had kept scrolls that had been connected to this secret society, and we'll get right back there next. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. I hope I did that synopsis justice there, Patrice Chaplin. I just wanted people to be able to follow along.
So it's a very big story, so it needs to be, you know, it's a big story, so it needs to be kind of streamlined.
Right. Yeah. And so tell, so Jose, you are in a romantic relationship with Jose. You're very bohemian.
Yeah.
It's 1955.
Yeah.
And so you start finding out is he's involved in this secret society, that they've got information, and you start to kind of figure this out a little bit. What were the meetings about? What was the point of the society? What did they do with this information that they had?
Well, what they did basically in the meetings was they performed the rituals. And that's what they were holding, was these rituals which had been there for, well, they said that they come from pre-time, prehistory, and that they'd not come from human resources at all. People had been initiated, and these very powerful rituals had been carried forward through the ages by a selected group of, well, let's say highly responsible custodians, probably about 8 in number. What they tried to do, and they did do to a large extent, was that they carried them out by high initiates, carry them out and go through the transformation. So they went through, in fact, into other times, other realms. They went through a portal. That's really what they were doing. It became known to, because there were other elements like sounds, which were most unusual. There were atmospheres around Girona, which caused some concern. There were also visions seen. They called the vision the lady with the cup. They said she was the Magdalene and she carried the chalice. The society then had to, according to how the state of things were in Spain, whether they were at war, whether they were, had the plague, because they were at war with the French a lot, whether the Moors were there, they had to move the material. It was always difficult to find the right place to move it. In the end, it had its place in the house with the tower, which was at one point the cemetery for the priests. It was called the Black Cemetery. So quite a lot of the residents thought it was sort of phantoms from this cemetery, which were causing the disturbance.
Okay, I'm going to push back again.
Yep.
So you go to these secret society meetings. I know this is for you. This is part of your life, so it doesn't.
Let me put my hand up there. I was never allowed in those.
Okay, I want to ask.
I witnessed one which Jean Cocteau went to because he was very interested.
Jean Cocteau, right?
Filmmaker, yeah.
Yeah.
But I wasn't part of the rituals, never allowed to be, no.
Now, who would tell you, though, that there was a time portal that was opening up? I mean, that's the part that, I mean, then Jose would say.
It came much later, much, much later. It came in 2003.
This is when he was dying and he decided to come clean with you?
That's when he thought he was dying. He had a heart attack. Several members of the then existing society were getting on in age, and they were worried who would actually hold the material. Where would the material go? Some people had already had bad experiences trying to keep it secret or trying to out it because the Vatican didn't want it out, that's for sure. There was another group, which I heard one of your ads about who runs the world. Well, it was without naming names, it was a group that were definitely after that material. They wanted it. I mean, at one point, Hitler had sent people down there to get it. The important thing, Ian, is between the two towers. It's called the Golden Cup. It's the point between the two towers. That was the point which was the most important because that's where the portal was. The rituals that were performed open the portal. So
And this is at Girona or Rennes-le-Château?
No, it's right in the middle. It's the peak of Mount Canigou.
Okay.
That's where the portal is. The most important portal is there.
Okay, and Because then we're led to believe there are other portals, not just the one, that there are many portals.
Yes, sir.
Why that area? Why that area? How did that? Why was that the place where time portals would open up?
Well, because that's where the ley lines, the energy sources, the exit and entrance from other realms. That was always the place, right from the very beginning of time. It's got this resonance. It couldn't exist for example, if you or I went there and we weren't in resonance with the portal, we would just find air. We would just find nothing. You have to have a resonance with the place to receive even a possibility to enter a portal, which in itself is extremely dangerous and questionable. They've actually located in that area, I think it's 11 portals, and there are various kinds. A portal is not the same in every place. It's what it's described really. It's a gap in the planet. It's a gap in the atmosphere, in the structure of the planet. They've been known for many hundreds of years, and they also give off considerable energy. So people used to, without knowing what they were, go to the area, the vicinity of a portal to be restored. And you see, Mount Canigou is a very powerful portal. It's actually at the peak of, it's the sacred mountain of the Catalans. And they say that when someone's been in contact with that portal, they are considerably changed afterwards. I know that Dali, Salvador Dali, went there. He was an initiate. He was part of this society.
So, it's fascinating. So, did they ever? You said it was dangerous when the secret society here starting in the 1950s, and you stayed in relationship with them throughout your life. That was dangerous. Did they ever lose anybody in the portal? Was there ever stories about somebody that didn't make it or that something tragic could happen?
The thing was that although I knew about the society, I had no idea it had to do with the portals with Saunier, with the Grail. I had no concept of that until quite casually my then publisher who came to Girona to visit was told by Jose, but of course there's no good going to Rennes Le Chateau. Everything about Rennes Le Chateau is here in Girona and always has been. And Saunier used to come here to visit.
Right.
And Saunier used to visit the French woman who lived in the house of the tower, and the tower was copied. And so I learned that much. And then later I learned about the society and how it was protected, as indeed I learned about Saunier, that he was unable really to leave his work. He had work to do in Rennes Le Chateau. He had to set out a code for those yet to come. That was his job. We always thought he was someone who just fell into a lot of money and didn't know what to do with it, and built these follies and houses and had these parties. And no, he had actual work based on Kabbalah, based on the rituals to actually lay out in that place for those yet to come.
So who you mentioned, and I stopped you from going down this road before, but you said that through the time portal, there would be visits from, but you did not witness, visits from Mary Magdalene?
That's who they said appeared, yes. That's, and they called the towers the Magdala Towers. They said it was the Magdalene, and she carried the chalice. And she was beneficent, and she gave healing to all around. Now, and let's say, then I checked on the number of sightings of her, appearances and effects of her, and I would say from 1902 onwards there were 5
sightings.
And they stopped in 76 when there was such a sort of upcry that the church got involved and said that this what people had seen was not the Magdalene, this is in Girona, but Jesus, and they allowed a shrine to be put up, which would quieten people down, and the church had to, in fact, authenticate what was seen, whether it was a miracle or not, and if it wasn't a miracle, you were either drunk or mad. So that was the end of that.
Well, that's interesting, and you know, we probably already know this, but that the word Magdalene, it comes to us as a corruption from, very likely anyway, scholars believe, from the Hebrew for the word for tower, Migdol.
Oh, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's interesting that she's coming through the towers, right there. All right, so then what did the society do? I mean, here they had all of this amazing information they had Kabbalistic formulas and all of this, esoterica that the rest of the world could probably use. What did they do to change the world with it? What was their, how did they live out the secret knowledge that they
had? Okay, that's a good question, because that was asked of them, why, by one of their members, why did they keep it to themselves? And the answer was, we are waiting for the world to become a more optimistic place. They were waiting for something to happen outside so that they could link in the material they had. In 2003, when this was now suddenly given to me and to a couple of other people, it wasn't more optimistic. There was no optimism to be seen. So they had to make a decision. The thing about the portals, too, was that I'll just put a flag up here. I did actually experience the portal myself. So in the end, I did get what I wanted to do.
Okay. Well, you got to tell us about that. Tell us, where did that happen?
That was on Mount Canigou, and that was an experience. I mean, I worked with the book City of Secrets. I worked a lot with one of the few Kabbalists who remain at this time, one of the few last Kabbalists. She's quite old now, and she's an active Kabbalist rather than a scholar. She's nothing to do with pop Kabbalah. She's actually a confirmed and a very high initiate. She explained, I said, I would like to go, I would like to do this. I would like to have the experience of going beyond time. And so she said, well, you can't just jump into it. You have to be an initiate. Otherwise, it's dangerous, and two, you will see nothing. So the initiation process, before you ever got into near a portal, is to pass through 11 different sites, a journey, if you like, which was in the Venus Magic Square, which I didn't know about at that time, but I do now, and it's got all the numbers that were written in the square. You followed 11 sites, including Rennes-le-Château, and it is under the constellation of the Great Bear and the Seven Stars. And this journey is the one that all of the custodians and all of the members of the society had to do before they ever were allowed into the society. So in effect, that the journey itself changed you, and then the entry, whether they made it or not, into the portal, also committed them further into holding of the material. I mean, it wasn't just, sort of kept in a cupboard or something. They actually used it. They examined it. They became high initiates. And one name especially is the Catalan poet Jacinto Verdaguer, who was a priest and a poet, and wrote a poem called Canigou, which was about the portal, traversing the journey to the portal, and how he experienced going through.
Well, what did
he
you experience?
He was then exorcised from the church. He then started doing very much healing and clairvoyance and exorcising devils. And I mean, he was definitely no longer a member of the church.
Right.
He had a very high spiritual level, not religious, but spiritual. When he died, he had a bigger turn out than Valentino. So he was a tremendous charismatic figure.
But
and
I can
that
ask
was
you,
in the 1800s.
Yeah, what did you experience when you went, when you had this time portal experience? What was that like?
Well, first thing I said was, how do I come back? You know, I was very keen to go and to experience it. I had to do, but the main thing was attunement. The attunement had to be right, and I had to get the right resonance, and I had to work for quite a long time with the Kabbalist in preparation to pass through the portal. Now, she never told me what to expect. She just said, make the attunement, do the breathing. You had to have done a certain amount of spiritual exercise before, that's for sure. And then when the guide comes from within, so it's like a figure comes up from within you and becomes exterior to you, you follow that guide. It then, the only way I can describe it is it's like a fairground ride. You have no control, forget control, you're just spinning round, and then you suddenly stop somewhere, and it's somewhere that you remember from childhood. You carry on and you go way beyond, let's say, this existence. And the control element is completely gone. It's something you never forget. It's like an imprint on your thoughts. Your thoughts are not there. The imprints are. I felt that I'd been experiencing this for, well, I thought a day, and I'd been there a mere 5 minutes. Unforgettable. It's a very optimistic feeling, and I only went a very small way, let me say. I didn't do anything like these people do. They go, they traverse this planet, this all these lifetimes, all these incarnations. They're off into another space altogether.
Like Jose, your boyfriend. Did he do this?
He doesn't talk about it. He doesn't say, he says very little.
Was he a person from the time period that you knew him, or was he visiting from another time period when you were in relationship with him?
I would have said the second.
Okay. That he was not of this time.
I would have thought so, yeah. And I would have thought the same as Salvador Dali, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of Salvador Dali as well? But did either of them tell you of the time that they would have preferred to have been in?
Well, Salvador Dali, he went to Perpignan Station, which is a station very near Spain, just over in France, where he used to send his paintings, his massive artworks off to America. And he stood there one day and he said, Perpignan Station is the center of the universe and nobody knows it. And what he was talking about was the portal of Canigou, which was just adjacent to the station, hanging over it.
All right, then hang on. You got to hang on to there. We're going to come back to that. Well, that's a great place to start with Salvador Dali saying that to our guest, Patrice Chaplin. And we have another hour coming up as we continue to tell the story of City of Secrets, the ley lines, the time portals. And we haven't even begun to tell the story coming up next on Coast to Coast.